on this path, we seek to cultivate wisdom. Whether our concentration practice enables us to cultivate wisdom. The breath meditation that we do puts us in a position so that we can develop wisdom. Now, the wisdom of the path, the Buddha's wisdom, is a lot different than what we might think of when we generally think about wisdom, or the cultural bias with regard to what wisdom is. We often think about it as perhaps, you know, the acumen that we've developed in terms of science and math and all the different things that we studied in school. Other ideas that we might have about what wisdom is. The Buddha's definition, again, is quite different. When we talk about wisdom, we're talking about understanding what true happiness is, understanding what's preventing us from true happiness, understanding what we need to do to find true happiness in our lives. And when we talk about understanding what true happiness is, understanding what's preventing us from true happiness, understanding what we need to do to find true happiness, you know, this understanding is in an intellectual understanding, because again, that's sort of a cultural bias about what understanding is. You know, the Buddha's understanding, or the wisdom of the path, is an understanding, a wisdom that we know inside, in the body, in the heart. It's actually a wisdom, of course, that's already there. It's not a wisdom that we acquire. It's a wisdom that is already there in the body and in the heart. It's not like that wisdom that you got when you got your PhD, you know, it's that wisdom was in those books in the college library, you know, and the professor tried to impart that to you. This wisdom you already have. You don't need to go to any college to get it in books, but we do need the Buddha's teachings to help us understand how to get to it, how to get to it. That's the path. So when we talk about wisdom and understanding what that is, it's also important to understand what the other side of it is. And sometimes that's called ignorance. Pali word is avijja. Ignorance means not understanding where true happiness is found, not understanding how to find true happiness, not understanding what we need to do. Ignorance is also not making an effort to do what we need to do to find true happiness. So if we think of wisdom as understanding true happiness, understanding what we have to do to find true happiness, understanding what's standing in the way of true happiness, that wisdom is contained in our understanding of the Four Noble Truths, in our ability to see things in terms of the Four Noble Truths, which again, those truths are within us. Ignorance would be not seeing things in terms of the Four Noble Truths, but also not making the effort to see things in the Four Noble Truths, not looking at things in terms of the Four Noble Truths, not looking at things with that kind of perception. So the First Noble Truth, of course, is to understand suffering, what's known as suffering, what we call suffering, or dukkha, or dis-ease, as we've been talking about. You know, it's a word that can sometimes, if we hold on to preconceived ideas about what words are, or our own definitions of what words are, can kind of take us off the path. Essentially, what we're doing in the First Noble Truth, when we're seeing suffering and understanding suffering, is we're understanding what's preventing us from happiness. This thing called suffering, the Buddha discovered, but we're asked to discover it for ourselves, because the fact that the Buddha discovered it is only going to get us so far. We have to discover it for ourselves. This thing called suffering, what the Buddha called suffering, You know, again, it doesn't really matter. You know, what it is this quality or experience that prevents us from happiness. Prevents us from happiness. So this is in the First Noble Truth. We're asked to see what's preventing us from happiness. And the Buddha said, this thing that's preventing us from happiness is this thing called suffering. You know, if we use that word suffering or dis-ease, you know, it's a very particular type of suffering or dis-ease. It's mental suffering. And it's mental suffering caused by clinging, the way that we're relating to our experience, by holding on to our experience, and it's rooted in desire and aversion. So this suffering is, you know, an expression of desire and aversion. So just don't have desire and aversion and you're okay. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, we need to do is to develop, you know, the right perception. And this is what we're asked to do in the practice. Through the concentration practice, to be able to take a step back from our experience, observe our experience, as the Buddha said, like one person observing another person, or a person standing looking at a person sitting, or a person sitting looking at a person lying on the floor, to take a step back from our experience, observe our experience in a cool, calm, objective way, and see what's happening is this thing called suffering. This is what we're asked to do. We talked about it last week as making a diagnosis. You know, so when, so to you know, to, for the first part of wisdom is to look for things in terms of the Four Noble Truths. So, you know, we have this sensitivity to when there is suffering, because if you don't have the sensitivity, if we're not looking at things in terms of suffering, if we're not looking to develop that perception, we're never going to notice it. So first we have to be able to have a sensitivity to when there's this suffering, this mental suffering, this desire and aversion, and then we have to recognize it. So it's kind of like, first you have to be willing to go to the doctor, and then the doctor can make the diagnosis. So, you know, it's sort of like, if you want to take that metaphor, you know, a little further, you know, science might find out that, you know, that there is this particular illness. You know, they never knew what it was before. You know, that happens a lot, right? Or it happens frequently. And then doctors learn about what that illness is, and they look for it when somebody comes in, and then they can see, oh, it's there. That's the First Noble Truth. It's like, okay, the Buddha's defined this particular illness, but it's up to us to look and see if it's there and make that diagnosis. So then when we see what we're seeing, you know, that's what we're calling it. Just like if you were going to call this illness whatever the illness is, you know, that is the perception that you have. And of course, that perception enables you to understand what's happening, but it also enables you to offer a prescription. Because if the doctor doesn't know what the illness is and then can't diagnose, he can't offer the prescription. So we develop this perception. This is what's ailing us. This is what's preventing us from being happy. So when we're practicing with this First Noble Truth, when we're seeing things in the First Noble Truth, we're seeing that what's happening is this suffering, this mental suffering, this mental suffering that's rooted in aversion and desire, and we're seeing that it's preventing us from happiness. Just like when you have an illness, you're seeing that it's making you sick. It's preventing you from your body from doing what your body needs to do. This type of suffering is a little different in that it's preventing us from being happy. It's preventing us from being happy. So this is the first part of the perception. The second part of the perception of the First Noble Truth, because there's really two parts, to see that this thing is suffering, is happening, and to be able to identify it as such, And to see that what's happening or this suffering is caused by clinging. I mean, we're already kind of doing that, right? You know, we're seeing, okay, this suffering is happening. There's this mental suffering going on. We may or may not be understanding that it's caused by clinging. So, you know, we have to really, you know, we're inclining in that way. So, because that's our understanding of what the suffering is, but, you know, I'm breaking it down. You know, we have to see that this is caused by clinging. That's kind of deepening into our diagnosis, is to see that this suffering is caused by clinging. So this suffering, this mental suffering, this aversion that's rooted in aversion and desire that's preventing us from happiness is caused by clinging. It's caused by clinging, which is something that we're doing, which is generally different than some other kind of illness that you have that, you know, is not caused by something that you're doing. It's, you know, an imperfection in the body or a virus that you picked up, you know. I mean, generally speaking, we don't, you know, go to the bodega and say, you know, can you give me the strain of that virus so that I can shoot it in my leg, you know. It's kind of what we do here, you know, because this suffering, this dis-ease, this disease of the mind and heart is caused by something that we're doing that we call clinging. So we have to see that. So it's this clinging that is expressed as aversion and desire. So, you know, we have to see that what's happening here, that our, you know, we've already identified this as a particular type of suffering. I mean, so, you know, we're developing a different type of perception, right? Because this isn't the type of perception that we typically develop. We don't usually have the perception that my, what's preventing me from happiness in my life is something that I'm doing. We usually have the idea in general that it's something that, you know, that others are doing or that, you know, may be happening to me in terms of conditions in my life, or maybe what I am, you know, is the cause of my suffering, but not something that I'm necessarily doing. Typically, we might, you know, say, well, what's preventing me from happiness is my job, or, you know, I don't have the job that I want, or the job that I have isn't going the way that I'd like, or I haven't achieved in my career what I'd like to achieve, and that's what's causing me the suffering in my life. That's what's preventing me from happiness, right? If I could only achieve my goals in terms of my career, then I would be happy. If I could only get the job, if I only didn't have this job, right? That's a big one. I wouldn't be happy. You know, or maybe it's the relationships in our lives that are the reason why we're not happy. Maybe, you know, we want a relationship with a certain person, or we want a relationship, period, you know, a romantic relationship. And we have the perception that not having that relationship that we want is the reason why we're happy, or we have the perception that the reason why I'm not happy in my life is because the relationship I have isn't going the way that I'd like it to go. You know, this is kind of one of the main areas where we assign the blame for our unhappiness is others. You know, if it wasn't for that person, what that person is doing or isn't doing, I would be happy. You know, I mean, the other place where we sort of assign blame is like ourselves, you know, these selves that we fabricate, you know. So, you know, if I wasn't this way, I'm this way, you know, so, you know, the self-judgment, the self-criticism, and, you know, just in general, the sense experiences that we have, we blame for our unhappiness, right? You know, sometimes that happens in the meditation. It's like, you know, I'd have a great meditation if that we were making noise outside the window, or if, you know, the fan wasn't going off the way that it's going off. Or, You know, just in general, I would be happy if my body didn't feel the way that it felt, right? It's like you're walking down the street in New York on a really hot and muggy day, and it's like the cause of my unhappiness is my heat and the mugginess and the clothes sticking to the body. 6 months later, you're walking down the street in New York City and it's 22 degrees below zero and it's windy, and the cause of our unhappiness is the weather. Or it's New York. Or it's, I'm such an idiot because I didn't get the right jacket. And sometimes for people, it's like the reason why you're not happy is you don't like the taste of what you're eating. I had dinner with somebody a few nights ago, and it was like at a health food restaurant, you know, and the person was like complaining about the broccoli. Oh, it's overcooked. Like really miserable. It's like, I mean, you know, it's like, thank God I don't go there anymore. Because, you know, of course I did, you know, but we do that. We can make ourselves so unhappy by not liking the way that our experience is. Something as, for me, as mundane or trivial as food. And even the emotions that we have, you know. It's like if I didn't have these emotions, I would be happy. You know, if I wasn't feeling these experiences of emotions, I would be happy. And then, of course, you know, the big experiences of sickness, aging, and dying. You know, if I wasn't sick, if I can prevent myself from being sick, I'll be happy. If I can prevent myself from aging, you know, that's a big one in our culture, right? If I can do all these things, I can go to the gym and eat all the health food in the world, I'm going to be happy. No, you're going to be healthy. It doesn't mean you're going to be happy. You might not even be that healthy. Let's witness the story about the broccoli. So what we're asked to see in developing wisdom, because we're asked to see what's preventing us from happiness. This is what wisdom is. And we're asked to see this for ourselves, you know, because, you know, our bias or what we believe in perhaps is that, or what we were taught, I mean, that is kind of what we were taught. If you get all these things and things go all the way, then you'll be happy. Well, the Buddha's saying, well, maybe that's not true, you know, and maybe what our problem is not that. It's not that. So, you know, in making this diagnosis, we're seeing that what brings about our suffering and what prevents us from happiness, what prevents us from happiness in this life is not our experiences of our jobs and our relationships and the experiences of the body and the experiences of the senses, but it's the way that we're relating to our experiences, what we're doing with regard to our experience. It's what we're doing with regard to our experience. It's the aversion and the desire that we bring to our experience, that we add to our experience, you know, and those, that aversion and the desire, you know, is the way that we're holding on to our experience. So we're holding on to the aversion about the way the body feels, or we're holding on to the feelings of aversion, the emotion of aversion, or the emotion of desire, or the desire for something. So, you know, again, what we're asked to do is to see that what's happening here, you know, when we are involved in this suffering, this mental suffering, that's, you know, which is preventing us from happiness, is what's happening here is that, you know, we're clinging, we're holding on, you know, we're involved in this aversion and desire. That's what we're asked to see. That's what we're asked to see. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. And of course, we're asked to see it not from an intellectual vantage point, but we're actually asked to experience it. Well, what's happening? Oh, I'm suffering. Well, what am I clinging to? Well, I'm holding on to this feeling of anxiety, subset of aversion, or this feeling of worry. You know, or I'm holding on to this wanting things to be different, anger towards that person. So this is what we're asked to look and see, that there's this suffering that's going on. This is what's happening. It's preventing me from being happy, and it's caused by my holding on to this aversion and this desire. This clinging to this aversion and desire. So what we're asked to do is to see that, you know, we have experience in life and we cling to it. So there's two things going on. Yeah? We have this emotion of anxiety, we hold on to it. We have this emotion of anger, we hold on to it. We have this emotion of desire, we hold on to it. We have an experience that's unpleasant and we hold on to it by disliking it. Or there's an experience that's pleasant and we hold on to it by wanting it. So we're holding on to these objects. You know, if it's the emotion, the sense experience, the taste, the food, the soggy broccoli, the sound, we're holding on. And this holding on, again, is expressed in aversion and desire. And one of the ways this, the Buddha described this experience is as the senses being on fire. You know, the mind being on fire. The famous sermon that he gave, of course, was the fire sermon, where he said, you know, the mind is on fire. You know, the intellect is on fire. The body is on fire. You know, we have the mouth is on fire. The ears are on fire. We have this human experience, and, you know, we're adding on this aversion and desire, or we're holding on to these feelings of aversion and desire, and we take this human experience and, you know, it's in flame. So the Pali word that's translated as clinging, upadana, one of the meanings of it is, you know, the fire that feeds on it's the holding on to the source, you know, so the fire holds on to the wood or the leaves or whatever. So another way to think about that in the word upadana in terms of what it means is feeding. You know, so the fire feeds on the sense experience. You know, that person the other night was, you know, that's maybe, I don't want to mix you up, but, you know, feeding on, you know, the unpleasant sensations of the broccoli, where we feed on the arising of the emotion of aversion or anger, anxiety. So I like this. I think, you know, when we think about, because, you know, what we're asked to do, of course, is to diagnose that there's this suffering and, you know, it's caused by clinging to something. So that's, you know, the diagnosis. So there's this mental suffering which is preventing me from happiness, and it's caused by me holding on, me clinging. And again, we have to experience that. And I think a good way, because I think this word clinging is a little hard sometimes for us to understand what it is, and really ultimately understanding it, you know, is going to happen by experiencing it. And a good way, I think, to experience it is, you know, feel it, is to think of it as, and perceive it as feeding on the object, feeding on the object, feeding on the object, feeding on the object. You're feeding on that visual image of the person that you see walking down the street that looks attractive, or you're feeding on the experience of anger or anxiety. We're feeding on it. So I think it's a useful way to understand, and it's one of the ways, it's one of the meanings of upadana, and it's one of the ways that Buddha talked about clinging, as we're feeding. You know, so to see that we're feeding, and that feeding is painful, you know? Feeding in and of itself is painful. And it brings about this suffering. So these objects arise, if it's sensations in the body. I mean, normally we talk about primarily the sensations in the body, you know, but even more so the objects that arise in terms of the mental states, right? The emotions, the anxiety and the stress and the worry and the anger and the desire, I mean, these are the biggies because these are the ones that are most deeply rooted karmically, you know? So these are the ones that, you know, where our suffering is largely found in the feeding on these mental experiences that arise. So these experiences arise, you know, out of past karma, you know, of anger, of anxiety, of worry, of stress, you know, fill in the blank, and we feed on it. And we feed on it. And we feed on it. We feed on it. Probably shouldn't have talked about that broccoli today, but, you know, but maybe that is a good example of, you know, it's not like when you feed on, I mean, unless you really got a problem. I mean, it's still not like that. It's not like when you feed on, like, a piece of food, you know, it's like the refreshments tonight, or there's a piece of broccoli and you have one taste, or you nibble on it a little bit, or something like that. I mean, when you feed on these experiences of anger and aversion and desire and stress and anxiety, I mean, you are just chowing down, right? I mean, it's this constant feeding on the object, right? It's not like, oh, let me have a little taste of anger today. No, it's never like that, right? You know, that comes up and you feed on it. Feed on it. A lot of the time you don't even realize you're feeding on it because it's so ingrained, the habits of feeding. Think about the anxiety that you fed on all day long, or the things that we've been talking about, the dis-ease that we feed on. So it's we just keep feeding it, feeding on it, feeding on it. And so an important element of the wisdom that we're looking to develop is to see you know, that we're feeding on these objects, you know, to see that, you know, we're clinging to these objects. You know, seeing that there's the object of anxiety, there's the object of stress, there's the object of despair, you know, there's the object of anger, and we're feeding and feeding and feeding. So to see that there's the object and to see that there's the feeding. And again, you know, this seeing is not intellectual. It's something that, you know, we have to experience. You know, you have to experience, you know, the object being there and the experience of you holding on to it, clinging to it, or feeding on it. You know, so to be able to have a felt sense of what it is to feed. You know, and of course we just don't feed on one object. You know, today I'm gonna feed on anxiety, you know, it's like we feed on anxiety for a while, then we feed on anger for a while, then we feed on desire, and then we might feed on the unpleasant sensation on the body, you know, and maybe we feed on the sound for a while, the disliking, you know, I mean, we're constantly feeding on different objects. Constantly feeding on different objects. It was like, you know, when I went away this spring, I took a boat, a beautiful trip from Stockholm to Helsinki. And, you know, at night they had a buffet, you know? It was like, but it wasn't any, you know, it was like a Swedish smorgasbord. You know, tables and tables and tables of meat and fish and vegetables and potatoes. And then of course all the salad and the dessert and all the beverages, right? You know? You know, and even then, I mean, you know, you go up, you fill your plate, you sit down, you eat, you get up two or three times, you know, but it's like, I mean, the way that we're feeding on the objects that we're feeding on is like we're at that smorgasbord all day long, you know? I mean, we're just feeding and feeding and feeding. We're constantly feeding. So, you know, that's the bad news. That's the bad news. The good news is that if we make the effort to develop wisdom, if we make the effort to see things in terms of the Four Noble Truths, if we make the effort to look and see what's preventing us from happiness, if we make the effort to look and see suffering, if we make the effort to look and see the objects that we're clinging to and the way that we're feeding on them, then we're on the path. If we begin to see these things, understand them, you know, we look at our experience, we understand it as we experience it in the body and in the heart. More and more we're able, you know, to not feed. You know, this is the beginning of not feeding. This is the beginning of refraining from feeding on these objects. First, we have to see that this is what we're doing, this is what we're feeding on. But if we can begin to see that, this is the beginning, and experience that, this is the beginning of coming to the end of that feeding. This is the beginning of alleviating our suffering and moving more and more to a greater happiness in our lives. So let's just close our eyes for a minute.